They treat everyone the same, but convicts actually have more rights than prisoners of war. And before that, when they were still marching us through the tree line, I told Andriy, Andriy, I'm not giving them the radio station's number or PIN code. Forgive me, brother, if they torture you because of it. Just hang in there. I took a few puffs, didn't even smoke half the cigarette, and spat it out. He asks, what, not gonna finish it? And I reply, you can't smoke enough to last you past death? They only started giving us toothbrushes after a year and a half. We were given soap because every week we had to go to the bathhouse. That was when I saw green grass for the first time in 6 months.
Hello, this is Michael Duncan and a True War Crime podcast where we talk about people being held captive by the Russians. Our stories are not just based on real events, these are the actual events. Today in the studio, I have Andriy Stratichuk. He is a former police officer who also went through Russian captivity. Andriy, you spent 2 years and 7 months in captivity, and before joining the military, you served in the police force.
First in the militia, then in the police.
The first question that comes to my mind is, did the Russians know about your background in the police? Was it an advantage for you, or did they pressure you even more because of it?
There was zero advantage. They treated us like complete nobodies.
So it didn't matter who you were before the war?
Nope, absolutely not.
Since you worked in law enforcement, you know what rights someone in a detention center should have. How would you evaluate the Russian penitentiary system and how it operates?
They treat everyone like dirt, but convicts actually have more rights than prisoners of war.
I see. How does that show up in practice?
Inmates have cigarettes and can get care packages from relatives. We didn't have the right to receive anything at all.
So for 2 years and 7 months, you didn't receive a single package from home, not a single letter?
I got my first letter in February 2024. It was three letters delivered all at once, one from my mom and two from my daughter.
So those three letters arrived in one single batch. Did you write back to them?
No, we weren't allowed to.
Then how did they find out you were in captivity so they could write to you?
When I was captured, the Russians filmed me on video. That's how my parents and family found out I was a POW.
Got it. That makes sense about packages and cigarettes. What about physical or psychological torture? Was the treatment the same for convicts as it was for you?
No, they were milder on convicts and much harsher on us. A convict can file a complaint, but we had no one to complain to. Russians, locals from Luhansk or Donetsk regions, even civilians who broke the law. They had at least some basic rights and were protected by them. We had no rights whatsoever. Even if someone from the Red Cross had visited, though I never saw a single one of them in person, God forbid anyone mentioned being beaten or tortured, the retaliation would fall right back on us.
And what would the consequences be?
More abuse.
And beatings?
And beatings.
Understood. But still, no matter what, shouldn't there be some paper trail? For instance, as a police officer, when you arrest a criminal, you bring them to a detention facility and sign a transfer document. There's a specific protocol on how to handle them. At least that's how it's supposed to work. They must have had some protocols or procedures on how to process different people. Do you know anything about how they handled that paperwork?
They didn't give us any official papers to sign. If we signed anything, it was completely blank sheets of paper.
So they just handed you a blank page and told you to sign it, right? Why do you think they did that?
It's hard to say, but probably for their own internal records. I couldn't read or see what would go on it. I could only sign. Just a blank piece of paper. And they say, put your signature right here.
And if you refuse?
They beat you up.
Do you know or have you heard how this system works in Ukraine? I mean, there are Ukrainians held by Russians and Russians held by Ukrainians. Is the standard different in our system? What do you know about that?
Unfortunately, nothing.
So you don't know what conditions Russian prisoners are kept in here in Ukraine?
Only what I've heard online, that they have better food and better living conditions. If they work at facilities in the penal colonies, they get financial compensation. That means actual money they can use later to buy tea or coffee.
Did you have any opportunity to work over there?
For our POWs who worked over there, the main incentive was just getting something to eat, an extra portion at lunch, breakfast or dinner, or maybe a cigarette.
So if a Ukrainian works in Russian captivity, the absolute most he can hope for is an extra ration of food?
Right.
And maybe a cigarette, but money is completely out of the question. Meanwhile, in Ukraine, as I understand it, Russians in captivity can earn money and spend it.
Exactly.
From my own experience talking to representatives of Ukrainian criminal intelligence, they mentioned that Russian POWs in Ukrainian custody actually have better conditions than Ukrainian convicts in our own prisons. That's because a lot of international organizations come to inspect their living conditions. God forbid there's a single bruise or anything out of line. By the way, that explains an interesting thing I've noticed during POW exchanges. I don't know if you've paid attention to this. Our guys come back emaciated, pale, clearly having survived horrific conditions. Yet they're smiling, overjoyed to be back in Ukraine, shouting, "Glory to Ukraine!" You can see pure positive emotion. But when you watch Russians returning home, you don't see those emotions. I get the feeling they aren't even that eager to go back to their country.
Yeah, I saw that myself during the exchange.
Why do you think that is?
They know what's waiting for them.
And what's waiting for them?
Being sent right back to the front lines.
Right back to the front. But don't Ukrainians go back to the front after captivity too?
That's strictly voluntary.
So if you want to...
You go back, yeah.
And if you don't want to?
You get discharged.
How exactly does that work?
After captivity, you're entitled to a deferment and can be discharged. After a while, you might be drafted again.
Got it. How does it make you feel knowing that Russian POWs in Ukrainian custody have better conditions than Ukrainians in Russian custody?
You'd think prisoners are prisoners on both sides, except over here, they're treated like human beings, while over there, we were treated like cattle.
Do you think that approach is right?
Of course not.
Why?
If it's a prisoner of war, various international organizations, the Red Cross, Red Crescent, and others, come to visit him. He can report that guards beat him or complain about bad food. For us, there was nothing even remotely close to that.
My question is, should we treat Russian POWs the same way they treat ours, or shouldn't we?
We have to remain human.
Remain human. So basically keep treating them the way we do now?
Yes.
Why do you think that's so important?
Because we aren't beasts on the battlefield. Sure, we're beasts. But once a person is a prisoner, you have to treat them like a human being.
If you're watching this video, please leave a comment below. It really helps the YouTube algorithm boost our placement. Now let's start from the very beginning of your story. We usually focus on the personal human story, the time spent in captivity. You were mobilized and you volunteered. That's an important detail, by the way. And you were captured on...
December 10th, 2022.
December 10th, 2022. Could you tell us the circumstances of how you were captured?
During a combat mission, our group moved into our designated grid square and walked right into an ambush. Retreating was out of the question because the distance between us was literally 20 meters.
20 meters between you and...
And the enemy, yeah, there was no choice but to engage in battle. My brother-in-arms, Andriy Biskup, ran off to my left. I spun around on the spot and hit the dirt. Another brother-in-arms behind me, Mikhailo, fell back a little. An intense firefight broke out immediately. Andriy was the first to get wounded. While lying down, he fired a grenade launcher and burned his own back. Then several machine gun rounds hit him. He was critically wounded. Only Mikhailo and I were left. I could hear gunshots right over my head. Mikhailo was firing from behind me. A grenade exploded to my right but missed me. A moment later, another one lands on the left. I felt a sharp impact in my left arm. I kept firing, but then I noticed something hot streaming down my arm. I looked down. My left wrist was practically torn in half. And right then, another grenade lands. I passed out. I came to because someone was dragging me. The gunfire had stopped. I could just feel my leg being dragged along the ground. I opened my eyes and saw someone pulling me. I looked to the side, white armbands on his legs. My left arm was useless, so I tried reaching for a grenade with my right hand. He just smacked my hand and said, "No, no, you're ours now."
You realized who it was right away?
Yeah. They dragged me to their positions and set me under a tree. I looked over. My brother-in-arms, Andriy, was already sitting in the dugout. They had given him some basic first aid, too. They wrapped my hand. They didn't beat or torture us, and they gave us some water to drink. We stayed at their position for about 10 or 15 minutes. They were having a shift change, so they pulled us up and marched us to their evacuation point. As we walked through the tree line, they stepped off to the right and told us, "Walk straight through the trees." I realized immediately they were using us to clear trip mines. Andriy and I walked slowly. I kept my eyes glued to the ground. We made it through that tree line. It was about 3.5 kilometers. We stopped. They gave us water again and handed us a cigarette. A 5-minute break and we kept moving. We reached their evacuation zone. Two Ural trucks were already waiting there with their troops. Out in the field, we were handed over to LNR fighters from Luhansk. They drove us to Kremina. In Kremina, they transferred us from the Urals into a Tiger armored vehicle and drove us further to some basement. They had one severely wounded guy, a 300, whom they somehow left behind. They took us, but left their own critically wounded soldier.
Was that your doing?
That was our handiwork. I was actually amazed they took us alive.
Yeah, that really is surprising. Okay, so they shoved you into that Tiger, started driving you around, and brought you somewhere. What was your first encounter with the FSB or the prison service like? How did they treat you back then?
At the first basement, they brought us down. It was a solid, deep basement, at least two full flights of stairs down. Looks like they had an observation post set up there because you could hear clear radio chatter.
Radio chatter, like over the comms?
Yeah, the radio comms. They blindfolded us and tied our hands in front. A medic came over, checked our wounds, gave us painkiller shots, and rebandaged my wound. And that's when the first circus started. Immediately the questioning began. Who are you? What were you doing? Who had the radio station? And what's the code? The radio was locked, so they turned it off as soon as they took it from me. I said, I don't know. I'm not the squad leader, just a sergeant. But before that, Andriy and I had made a pact while walking through the tree line. I told him, Andriy, I won't tell them the frequency or the radio pin. Forgive me, brother, if they torture you over it. Just endure it. Also, those bastards couldn't listen in on our comms. So the very first thing they ask is, who had the radio station? Immediately, Andriy takes a kick to his left side. He says, not me. Obviously, that meant it was me. Right away, I take a boot to the chest. They demand, radio code, pin code. I say, I don't know. The commander stayed behind. He managed to pull back. Since he had no room for the radio, I carried it. I don't know the code, though I still remember that code to this day.
By the way, you never gave them the pin code, so can you say it now?
9,322. They beat us up a bit, but then backed off. A medic came back, gave us another painkiller, and rebandaged us. They handed us buckwheat porridge mixed with sand. It crunched horribly between our teeth. I barely managed two spoonfuls. It was impossible to eat with all that sand. My comrade tried eating it too, but couldn't. Shortly after, a vehicle arrived and they loaded us in, blindfolded with zip-tied hands. They drove us for about 2.5 hours. The truck stopped, the ramp opened, Andriy stepped out first, then they pulled me up. My head was hanging low. I glanced out from under my arm and saw a Russian screwing a suppressor onto a Makarov pistol. I thought, well, this is it.
Did you think that was the end of the line?
Yes. They led Andriy off to the left somewhere and marched me straight down the road. We walked maybe 100 or 120 meters. They asked me, do you smoke? I said, yeah. He handed me a cigarette, but since my hands were tied behind my back, I couldn't hold it. He just stuck it in my mouth and lit it. I took a couple of puffs, didn't even smoke half of it, and spat it out. He asked, what, not gonna finish it? I answered, you can't smoke enough to last you past death. And suddenly, pop right by my right ear. I heard the bullet whiz past. A couple of seconds later, pop by my left ear. Same thing. I dropped my head and stared down into the flashlight beam pointing between my feet. And he goes, didn't wet yourself, huh? They shoved me back and led me to the truck. Andriy was already sitting inside, and off we went again.
Did they do the same thing to him?
He told me later that they did. They drove us further. We could hear heavy artillery, incoming and outgoing rounds. We arrived somewhere. They processed us extremely brutally at that location. Right off the bat, they bent us over so hard. I'd never been bent over like that in my life.
Could you explain what you mean by that?
Hands tied behind our backs, and they bent us so far forward it wasn't even an L shape. They literally folded you in half.
So your head was pointing straight down?
Almost to my feet, almost touching the ground. They dragged us down some stairs, shoved us into another basement, and there was ankle-deep water in that basement. They just threw you right into the water. Once they finally untied our blindfolds, we saw some mosquito netting. So we sat on those mosquito nets. First they took Andriy upstairs for interrogation, then me. What did the interrogation consist of? We were tied up. First off, full name, unit, who are you? Where are you from? Have you seen foreign mercenaries, foreign instructors? Then back to the same thing. Who had the radio station? Was it you? I said, me. What's the code? I said, I don't know. He unwraps my left arm right where the open wound is. Some fingers pointing up, some down. He takes a screwdriver and jams it right into the open wound. I screamed like a stuck pig from the pain, but I still didn't tell them a thing. I answered their basic questions, but regarding the radio pin code, nothing. And that went on for 6 hours.
6 hours of this.
Dragging us up, throwing us down, in turns. Me then him, me then him, me then him. A 5 to 10 minute breather between turns. Eventually, they got tired of it and went to take a break. We managed to sleep for about 3 hours in that freezing wet basement, if you can call it sleep, because it was bitter cold and your entire body was aching with pain. In the morning, a truck arrived. They tried interrogating us one more time, but got nowhere. They loaded us into some van. We drove for a pretty long time. They brought us to a house and slammed us face down on the concrete floor again. First, they took me in for interrogation. At least, I assume it was an interrogation. They removed my blindfold. The room looked like a gym or something similar. A captain was sitting there and said, "Strip." I started undressing slowly. He saw that we were all shivering violently from the cold and said, "Take your time. Do you smoke at home?" I said, "Yeah." He handed me a stool. I sat down and smoked calmly. He asked, "Where are you from?" I said, "Lviv." "Did you serve before?" "Yes." "Where?" I answered. "First in the militia, then the police. 268. "Contract?" "No," I said, "mobilized." "All right," he said. "You smoked? Now calm down." I slowly started undressing, stripped down completely naked. He spotted my tattoo and said, "You're one of ours."
It didn't trigger him that you were from Lviv?
Not at all. He spoke to me in Russian, so I replied in Russian. He said, "Your Russian is good, almost sounds like a Moscow accent." Anyway, he looked us over. I got dressed. He checked our belongings to make sure there was nothing dangerous. But in my pants, in a lower pocket, I had a single bullet left. He asked, "Why'd you keep this?" I said, "The last bullet, as they say, for myself, so I wouldn't surrender." They brought me down to a basement. There were two cells in that basement holding our captured guys. One cell had about six men, and the one they put me in had one guy. They sat me on a cot, brought some food, cookies, tea, stuff like that. Then it was Andriy's turn. Same procedure. Stripped him, inspected him, but they didn't bring him down to the basement. I asked the guards where my buddy was. They said, took him to the hospital. That felt a bit strange to me. After a while, about 3 hours later, they pulled me back upstairs. A bag over my head so I couldn't see anything. Short drive. We pull into some yard. They pull the bag off my head. A hospital. They brought me inside. The duty doctor took a look at my wound and said, "We'll probably have to amputate." By that point, I was so numb to everything. No fear, no pain, just completely drained. I said, "Do what you gotta do." Then he said, "You know what? Let's do this. Bring him back in the morning. Our specialist will be here and he'll examine it." While all this was going on, he rebandaged my hand. That dressing change took 2 hours because the bandages were so soaked in dried blood that it took forever to soak them loose. He bandaged me up and sent me back to the commandant's office. They left me alone for the night. In the morning, their interrogators came, likely a mix of MGB, FSB, and military intelligence. They all started interrogating me together. They bring me into a room on the second floor. You know, like in those sadistic movies, two tables, and on one table there are pliers, a saw, a screwdriver, a baton, a taser, a gas mask. They ask, "How are we gonna talk? With these or normally?" I said, "Let's talk normally. Ask your questions and I'll answer." They asked standard stuff. Full name, origin, family status, phone numbers of relatives. To be honest, I couldn't remember my mom's or my wife's phone numbers. I said, "I don't know them, I only remember my own." Then came questions about NATO, mercenaries, weapons. I said, "I saw tanks." "What kind of tanks?" "Green ones." Immediately took a couple blows to the head. I said, "I saw your tanks. I never saw any of ours, because while they were driving us through that tree line, they had so much armor there, more than I'd ever seen in my life."
So you actually saw a lot of their heavy armor?
A ton of it. It was the early stage of the war, plus an endless sea of personnel. At the time, they weren't afraid of anything, didn't even bother hiding. Shelling, incoming strikes, they didn't take cover at all. If one of their guys got killed, meh, let him lie there. They just walk around, smoke, chop wood. Once they finished interrogating me, they sent me back to the cell. A bit later, the senior officer, the captain who originally processed me, came by and they took me to the hospital. At the hospital, they examined me and said, "He's staying here." I was captured on the 10th. By the 11th, I was at the commandant's office in Luhansk, and on the 12th, I was admitted to the hospital and operated on. We were guarded by two armed locals from the commandant's office. The room had 9 beds, and I was the 10th patient.
Were the others also?
Yeah, all our captives.
By the way, regarding those questions about NATO, instructors, and so on, was every single interrogator obsessed with that topic?
Yes.
Why do you think they cared so much about that?
They needed a narrative, most likely.
To claim they were fighting NATO?
Precisely, like, how could Ukrainians possibly fight us on their own?
So, just to put things in perspective, the Russians were interrogating our POWs, including you, about NATO troops, gear, and instructors just to spin a story for the world or their domestic audience that they weren't fighting Ukraine, but NATO.
Exactly.
Understood. Where were you taken after Luhansk or the Luhansk region? Was it a pretrial facility or a prison?
First it was the commandant's office, then the hospital.
And after the hospital?
Back to the commandant's office. I spent almost a month and a half in the hospital. They stitched up my arm, didn't do anything else, just stitched it up.
Were the conditions in the hospital at least somewhat decent?
Yeah. The staff was hostile at first, but gradually warmed up. We even found common ground with the guards. They brought us cigarettes. On New Year's, the medical staff even treated us to some treats, cookies, an orange, or a mandarin. So the treatment was reasonably okay.
By the way, one guy told me in an interview that during the first months of 2022, those who fought in the proxy DNRLNR forces were extremely hostile toward our guys. But later, after seeing how the Russians completely leveled Mariupol and how ruthlessly they acted, they actually started treating our guys better, realizing that Russia was the worst option. In your experience, can you confirm or deny that?
The ones I interacted with were thoroughly brainwashed, so I wouldn't say they were more sympathetic to us than to the Russians. They bowed down to the Russians blindly. They didn't mess with us much while I was in the hospital, though. Communication was civil. We avoided political topics and talked about neutral stuff. Books, poetry, movies, everyday life.
Casual topics.
Yeah. They'd even ask for home renovation tips, what advice I could give. After the hospital, I was moved back to the commandant's office. The room had no windows, just a door. You had no idea if it was day or night, only gauging time by when they brought breakfast and dinner.
What about lunch?
There was no lunch.
Were you alone in that cell?
There were two of us at first, then they put two more in.
How long did that last?
4 days. On the morning of the fifth day, they pull us out of that cell. Handcuffs on our wrists, bags over our heads. Driven somewhere. I figured it was a pre-trial detention center. They brought us to Luhansk detention center. Intake processing wasn't brutal right away. Stripped us down as usual, searched our things, took away our old Soviet-style uniforms. I was left in just my underwear. They took our shoes immediately and gave us cheap slippers. Shoved us into what they call the bag, a cell that's literally 3 feet by 3 feet.
3 feet by 3 feet?
3 by 3.
Like a punishment cell?
Something like that.
And they put two of you in there?
One by one, just one person per cell.
For how long?
I spent about 2 hours in there. The windows were way up high, completely out of reach, and didn't open. It was freezing.
In the winter?
Yeah, early February.
And was that the facility where you stayed long term?
That was Luhansk Detention Center.
Did you spend the next 2 years there?
No. We were only there for about a week. One morning they hauled us out of Luhansk Detention Center. Another long drive. Cold. No warm clothes provided. We arrive at some penal colony, the truck door opens, and we hear a gauntlet of guards waiting, and you have to run through that gauntlet.
Brutal intake?
Brutal. They beat you from every angle. They don't care if you're wounded, disabled, young or old, they beat everyone. Made it to the parade grounds, lined us up in formation.
Excuse me, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate that intake beating, 10 being the absolute worst?
About a 6. That wasn't even the worst yet.
Got it, but still far from easy, I imagine.
For someone who's never experienced that before, it's a total shock, to put it mildly.
Believe me, we talk about these intake beatings in almost every interview.
Every single prison colony had those intake beatings. They shoved us up to the second floor. Standard questioning again, who are you? Take photos, basic routine. A senior officer comes out and says, that's it, nobody will touch you anymore. Now you'll be rounded up and moved to the local sector. You'll be assigned to units there. After a while, they took us to the bathroom. Bathhouse first. The bathhouse was just a shower room, but with zero hot water. You washed with freezing water in the freezing cold, essentially. Then to the delousing station to treat our clothes. Shoved us quickly into the cafeteria, fed us something that looked terrifying. But we were so starving, we gulped it down without even noticing.
Like, no idea what this is, but I'm eating it.
Exactly. There were about 25 of us. We went to the local sector, divided into units. I ended up in Unit 12, Sukhodilsk Maximum Security Penal Colony Number 36, Unit 12.
And that's where you spent 2 years?
Yeah.
2 years and 1 month, if I'm not mistaken. Okay, looking back at those 2 years overall, how difficult was it just being there? Let's try that 1 to 10 scale again, compared to what came later.
On a scale of 1 to 10, I'd say a 5.
A 5, so it was manageable, but still far from smooth or easy.
Yeah, tolerable, let's put it that way.
Tolerable. What was the general attitude of the guards, and who were they? Were they local Ukrainians who turned coat and became Russian citizens, or were they actual Russians brought in?
They were local Ukrainians who became Russian subjects.
And how did they treat you?
Hostile.
Extremely hostile?
Very hostile.
Why? How did they justify or express it?
Because to them, we were all Benderites.
Especially since you were from Lviv?
Even more so. They said we were traitors because we betrayed Russia and chose Europe over Mordor. All that kind of garbage.
That's a very telling point. If Europeans are watching this, look at the price Ukraine is paying. The Russians consider us traitors simply because we chose to be part of Europe instead of Russia.
Exactly.
What other propaganda talking points did you hear over there? Things you knew were outright lies, but they acted like absolute gospel truth. What did they say about NATO? The West, Europe, or America?
They constantly blasted. Let me tell you how our typical day started. Wake up at 5 a.m. You sprint out into the local sector yard. That's the area between two barracks. Each unit has its designated spot for formation and physical drills. They turn on a loudspeaker, and commands for their morning exercise blast out. You do the exercises, and then you have 10 to 15 minutes to wash up, if you have anything to wash with, and brush your teeth, if you have a toothbrush. If you don't, too bad.
They didn't provide those items?
Not at first.
Where were you even supposed to get them?
Just water, or the guys traded with regular convicts.
Trading items?
Yeah, bartering.
How long did you go without toothpaste or soap?
A year and a half.
A year and a half without toothpaste, a toothbrush, or soap?
They only started issuing toothbrushes after a year and a half. Soap was handed out occasionally because we were taken to the bathhouse once a week, so soap was around.
How do you maintain oral hygiene without a toothbrush?
Just like that, rub your teeth with a finger, or put some soap on your finger and scrub. Morning drills end, you wash up, then line up for breakfast. You run out one by one. The distance from the yard to the mess hall is about 15 meters. First came the guys who could walk on their own, followed slowly by the severely wounded, because our 12th unit was designated specifically for the wounded and disabled. Units 11, 8, and 9 had relatively healthy guys. Unit 12 was mostly sick and wounded. We marched first. You enter the mess hall, get in line at the counter. At one window, they hand you bread. Not half a loaf, just a tiny slice of white bread and a matching slice of black bread. Then you move to the next window. In one cup they pour a bit of tea. In another, some porridge, barley, oatmeal, wheat or corn grit. They give you a large mug, but only pour about half an inch of tea or water at the bottom. You have to devour all of it insanely fast. On command, you stand up, finished or not, and sprint out to line up outside. While others are finishing up, you stand outside singing their songs. They especially loved forcing us to sing Katyusha, the Russian national anthem, the old Soviet anthem and stuff like that.
Like Victory Day and all those?
Of course, you stood there singing. If you sang poorly, you sang it again. And if you were relatively healthy, they'd order you to march back to the unit in a duck walk. You know what a duck walk is?
Yeah, crouch down low.
Deep squat, waddling like a duck.
Knees bent in that forced position.
And we had so many guys with severe leg injuries, but they forced even them to do it. If you were on crutches, obviously not. While the others duck walked, the guys on crutches had to sing. That's how they marched back.
This obsession with forcing POWs to sing, how often did they do that?
Every single day.
So every day you had to sing Russian songs?
Yes, the prison administration, especially the operational department, handed out lyric sheets. They gave out maybe 6 sheets per unit.
I never really thought about this before, but I'm genuinely curious. Was this ever practiced in other countries or during World War I or World War II, forcing POWs to sing enemy patriotic songs? Or is this a uniquely Russian invention?
It's entirely their thing.
Why do you think they do it?
First, to humiliate us and glorify themselves. Like, look how powerful we are, forcing prisoners to sing our songs.
Maybe they thought that by making you sing Russian songs, you'd somehow grow to love Russia?
Or hoping someone would break, surrender, and switch sides.
Did that ever actually happen?
Not in our unit, but I heard rumors about it.
Out of a massive group of people, obviously someone might crack.
At Colony 36, I never saw it personally, but word came in that guys from other colonies defected.
Since our time is somewhat limited, let's pick up the pace. Staying on this Luhansk colony, how often were beatings handed out?
Beatings happened every day. While our 12th unit was targeted, less because it was seen as the cripple unit, other units were beaten constantly, practically daily.
How severe was it?
Mostly torture with batons, tasers, or field military phones, TAP-57s. They called it giving you a phone call to your family.
So they'd call you out somewhere?
An officer from the operational department or administration comes over and says, pack up so-and-so. You walk to the gate, a guard takes you, hands you over to operational officers, and the festival begins.
What exactly went down there? A guy walks in, sits down, and what do they say to him? Now you're going to call your family?
Mainly, they were fabricating fake criminal charges against our POWs, mostly targeting guys from Mariupol, claiming they fired on civilians. If you refuse to sign the confession, the torture starts.
That aligns with what other Mariupol survivors told us, Yevhen Malik, Oleksandr Avramenko, Mykola Yurlak. They all said the exact same thing. They were forced to sign confessions because the Russians desperately needed to justify the massive civilian casualties in Mariupol and pin the blame on Ukrainian soldiers.
Yeah, they attached two wires, one to your ear, the other to your genitals, and hand-cranked the dynamo generator.
How long would that go on?
10 seconds, and you pass out. Guys had permanently charred earlobes. They'd walk out covered in severe bruises and broken ribs.
How frequently could that happen to a single prisoner?
5 or 6 times, easily.
Over what time frame?
Within a single week. If someone refuses to take the fall and resists to the end, once a guy breaks, he signs whatever paper they shove in front of him and they back off for a bit. But the moment there's the smallest minor rule infraction, it all restarts. And when they ran random cell shakedowns in the local sector, they just beat everyone blindly. Even the severely injured got laid in two.
If everything you just described was roughly a 5 on your scale, then let's move on to Kemerovo, where I take it things were dramatically worse.
Yeah, it was far more grim over there.
You spent 2 years in Luhansk region, and then you were transferred to Kemerovo?
6 months, yeah. 6 months in Kemerovo.
Comparing those two periods, which was worse? 6 months over there or 2 years in Luhansk?
6 months over there.
So 6 months inside Russia proper was vastly worse than 2 years in Luhansk? And Luhansk is occupied Ukrainian territory where, as we just heard, the treatment was already horrifying and brutal. You mentioned Kemerovo earlier, and it immediately reminds me of 2018 when that tragedy happened. That massive shopping mall caught fire and people died, including children. Back then, a lot of my friends and acquaintances posted messages of sympathy on social media. It felt strange to me seeing people express condolences to a country that was already our enemy, waging a hybrid war against us and occupying our land. I thought, why are people posting this? Don't they realize these are our enemies? But later I came to view it the way you put it. We aren't monsters. Even though they were our enemy, basic human empathy was still intact back then. I don't think any of that empathy remains today, given the sheer magnitude of devastation Russians have brought upon our land, our country, and our people. But back then, that's how it was. So you arrive in Kemerovo. Tell us, what was the intake like?
The intake was pure brutality. What happened in Luhansk and Sukhodolsk was a cakewalk compared to this.
What made it so much worse? In Luhansk, they beat you with batons and shockers. What went on here?
In Luhansk, they just beat me with batons in a hallway. In Kemerovo, the second I stepped off the transport vehicle, I didn't even step off. They threw me out like a dog, grabbed me instantly, twisted my arm so hard I felt my joints pop, slammed me against a wall, and ordered me to strip fast. I barely unbuttoned 2 buttons before someone grabbed me from behind, yanked my clothes, and tore them clean off. Didn't just strip me down, they ripped off my undershirt and everything all at once. Right then, I knew this was a whole different level. They pinned us against the wall with our hands up. I hear an admin officer walking down the line asking, did you shoot? Our guys say, no. And all you hear is thud, thud, thud. Next guy, did you shoot? Thud, thud, thud. He gets to me. Did you shoot? I say, I shot. Did you kill? I killed. He patted my cheek and said, good job. That was it. Then they haul you away, beating you continuously along the way, blindfolded with a bag on your head. They toss you the clothes you're supposed to wear, but you can't pick them up because your hands are pinned behind your back. They drag you and beat you non-stop. If you don't march fast enough or lose your slippers or clothes on the ground, they beat you harder for it. They bring you to some medical check. You can't see where you are because of the bag on your head. They slam you against a wall and keep beating you. You're doing nothing and they just keep beating you. Then they pull you up and sit you on a chair. Brief questioning. Full name, birth year. They inspected me, saw my tattoo, beat me again, dragged me somewhere else, shoved me into a cell and yelled, no standing up. You're forced to kneel with your head pressed against the concrete floor and hands behind your back. You stay kneeling like that for an hour and a half, 2 hours. You have no right to move.
How long did this intake process last, roughly speaking?
About 25 minutes. In those 25 minutes, you saw God, as the saying goes.
25 minutes of intake, non-stop beatings, and what then? Straight to the cell?
First, to the medical unit. Quick check. Weight, height, age, injuries. Jotted it down fast and bent you right back over. You can't see who you're talking to or what meds they're shoving into your mouth. Some pill for your heart or something else, you have no idea. You just hold it on your tongue. They throw you into a cell, slam you onto the floor and yell, "You have no right to stand up." You kneel there for an hour and a half, 2 hours. You hear them dragging someone else down the hall and throwing them in beside you. That happened 3 times. I was brought in first, then another guy, you can't see who it is, then a third. We knelt there for about 2 hours. At least it felt like 2 hours, because I couldn't feel my legs anymore. The door closes, the food hatch opens, and the guard says, "You can stand up and put your clothes on." You dress as fast as you can while they scream at you. Dressed, heads down, they order, "Stand on the line." 2 hard knocks on the door, you have to drop face down on the floor, hands behind your back, palms facing up, head down, eyes closed. They demand your name, you state it. And they reply, "You're not a POW, you're a body bag."
They literally called you body bags?
Yeah, we were body bags to them.
Why body bags?
Because they considered us already dead.
I see. Okay, so you're in the cell and they laid down the rules. What was a typical day like there? How was it different from Luhansk?
Wake up was at 6 a.m. The local PA system turned on. We called it the music box, blasting from 6 a.m. until 10 p.m. nonstop.
Nonstop?
Nonstop.
What was playing, songs or lectures?
Their patriotic songs, Gazmanov, Vika Tsiganova, mixed with lectures on the history of the Russian state.
Like propaganda lectures?
Yeah, claiming Kievan Rus never existed, that only their Rus existed. You had 5 minutes to get up, make your bed, another 5 minutes to wash up and use the toilet, and then you stood on the line until mealtime. You weren't allowed to sit, let alone lie down on the cot. You just stood. Basically, from 6:30 a.m. to 8 a.m., you stood.
In the morning?
In the morning. Breakfast comes, 2 or 3 guys stand in the cell. One takes the food, puts it on the table. The command comes, "Commence eating." You sit down and devour it rapidly. The food was piping hot. We barely had time to finish, and we still had to wash the bowls and hand them back. The daily bread ration was half a brick-style loaf per person.
That's it?
That was it.
Just bread?
Well, the daily bread ration was a brick loaf sliced lengthwise, so half a loaf per guy per day.
For the whole day?
Those 3 small slices for 3 men.
Besides bread, did you get anything else?
Porridge, tea, watery grit, buckwheat, rarely rice, mostly oatmeal.
Any meat or fish?
No, none of that. Lunch might have a tiny speck of meat floating in it. Dinner was the same.
Tell me, how much weight did you lose over those 6 months?
When I arrived, they weighed me at 70 kilograms, 154 pounds. By the time I was released, I weighed 59 kilograms, 130 pounds.
Those numbers speak louder than words about what the rations were like.
Lunch was water with 3 potatoes, occasionally a tiny piece of carrot. Dinner was rotten cabbage drowned in cold water.
Did you spend most of your time inside the cell, or did they let you out for air?
No, we were stuck in that cell continuously. You either stand or lie down. After breakfast, you pass the dishes back and you stand on the line again. Music blasting nonstop, and you have to sing their songs or the Russian anthem.
Was the music loud?
Extremely loud.
And that was every single cell?
Every single cell.
How psychologically distressing was that for you?
It was horrific. You almost never get used to it.
One of the guys I interviewed told me that even a year after coming home, he sometimes catches himself unconsciously humming the Russian anthem at night.
Yeah, that happens.
Did that happen to you too?
In the beginning, yeah, it did.
An extended version of this conversation is available on Patreon, so if you're interested, head over there to watch the full version.